the word shepherd, I mean, it runs right through our culture, right through every culture just about in the world, as care, doesn't it? Yeah. You associate shepherding,
yeah,
care, looking after, yeah, protecting from danger.
But yeah, also and them did. We were shepherd. There were
exactly
no four-wheel drive motorbike. No. You walked.
You walked
everywhere. And when you were walking, you were seeing things.
But what about the other particular cares? Because I remember my mum talking about them tarring the sheep and, you know, putting stock on tar if they found things and cutting out, you know, if there were worms and things, they'd cut them out. But they'd treat everything individually, every sheep.
Yeah.
So there was
when I was young, you didn't get worms in moorland sheep.
No.
Because they were so thin on.
Yeah.
As they weren't, you know, they didn't get a worm burn. Mm. If they got maggots, if they got blown, stock on tar, if you found them in time, you know, if you were out and walking, you saw these things. Because if they got blown, they tended to get in bracken beds, out of sight. Mm. And if you didn't see them, you always had a good dog. Mm. And the dog would wing them. So you'd go with your dog. He'd find them.
When you were full on with your sheep, Bill, can you describe the cycle of the year?
Well, before lambing light, you'd round up, and some of the sheep we lambed outside because we hadn't enough in byland to bring them in for lambing. And fair lot, you know, they were still lambed out on open. And you needed a good dog. And lambing time, I always loved lambing time. It was like Christmas. Then, you know, when that had finished, you'd have to set them round them all up and earmark them. All lambs were earmarked then. There no tags or anything.
So what does earmarking involve?
Well, a series of notches in your lambs' ears.
Yeah.
And when they were notched, that were with them till they died.
Mm. With the sheep, this large number of sheep, did you feel that you knew them?
Oh, yes. If some went missing, you knew that such a sheep were missing. If you look at some of them pages, it gives you marks. And all these different farms, they all had a specific, had a hornburn, rattle mark or earmark. These agricultural merchants have made all these things for agriculture. They made all these different shapes. And I've still got my earmarkers. Still got them.
And when it came to shearing, when did you do your shearing?
Usually July you'd start on shearing.
July you'd start, so quite late on because they're high
up. Well, it was still, you know, odd years we'd shear, and then next morning you'd find one or two was frozen death, it was that cold. And when you sheared them, you rounded them up, brought them in, sheared them, dipped them, and plenty of organophosphorus, arsenic dip, to kill bugs on them, mark them, ready to let them out again next day when you gathered next piece of land in.
So do you remember when the chemical dips first came in?
It was a liquid form when I first remember, but my dad said when they first started it coming like a block of soap, and that were arsenic. Arsenic dip, and you had to cut it up and melt it in hot water. Put it in there. Now, the big thing in them days was sheep scab. It had decimated a lot of sheep flocks. So government brought in as all sheep had gotten dipped and immersed. And it was Cooper, McDougall and Robertson, they made a lot of dip in them days. And start off it coming like a block of soap. And then they perfected it into a liquid.
Is this two different dips? The arsenic and the organophosphate, were they in a different...
Well, organophosphorus didn't come in
until... That was until...
That came in later
50s,
on.
Yeah, in the 50s, but you started off with this arsenic.
Arsenical dip, yeah. Which come in like block, and they made it up. Mm. Never heard tell of anybody dying from using that.
No. And it was effective.
Yeah, and then the... Deldrin dip. Organochlorine, that's what they said. That were killing eagles or something.
Well,
if they had dead sheep.
Well, it also killed all the otters, because of course it got into the river system.
Yes.
And it killed the sparrowhawks and the peregrines as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it got on, it was on seed dressings, they were using it for seed dressings as well. That came in the 50s, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in the 50s. And then as they went on, they got onto these argon-phosphorus stuff and forgot to tell farmers, be careful, it'll kill you.
So we've gone from these awful cycles where you have things that are terribly bad for the environment and then terribly bad for people. Yeah. I think we're back on the bad for people ones now, aren't we?
I've no idea what's in dip nowadays.
Yeah. So with you were doing all that. Did you get training from the ministry people? Did
training?
You? Training? No. Nobody came out? Nobody helped you understand?
The only persons came out were policemen. Yeah, informed police you were dipping in them days, and they had to come out and just get the watch out and see if that sheep had been in the tub for a minute. And some of the policemen had come out, they'd stand there and time you every sheep till they got fed up and went. Mm. Others would come out, look at dip tub, cup of tea and bacon butty.
So what happened to the dip when it was finished with?
Plug were knocked out at the bottom of the dip and it percolated in them days. Mm. Percolated.
We've gone through the shearing, dipping.
And dipping
in the summer.
And dipping. Then, as you get to back end, obviously, you started selling lambs, you draft sheep and that. Now, when I left school, we walked them to Buxton Market, sheep what we were selling, and it was my job with the dog on a piece of string, walk in front, so that sheep couldn't get too far ahead-like. We just walk them up Terrace Road, in Buxton, into Castle Market at Buxton. No, we walked them from halfway up Long Hill. We probably walk them, I don't know, 4 miles.
On the road the whole way?
Or we go cross-country path and then follow main road.
Oh, but
you didn't see many cars, though. And then there were a guy who used to come from Northamptonshire, where my dad worked when he was first married, and he used to come and buy draft ewes. And he'd buy so many pens full, and he'd have trucks ordered off British Rail, and we had to walk them back down Terrace Road and put them in cattle pens at Buxton Station, and they'd go be railed down to Northampton.
Amazing.
So you draft ewes, what were they?
They were sheepers that had done about three years on hill. They'd be starting wearing out a bit by now. And anything as my dad didn't like, you'd get some of the buggers for straying like. So when we caught them, like, they had a piece of string tied in their ear.
Yeah.
Naughty girl.
Yeah, so they all went to a fresh road.
Yeah.
And so what surplus lambs and all that. A few breeding tucks. Yeah. You take them.
So that was, you'd be buying there as well, would you? Or?
He'd only buy tops.
How many did you have? How many tops did you keep?
Then? A few.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Pardon me for asking. But that would be a big sort of busy time sheep sales. This is mainly around September.
Mainly around September.
So going into October. Because it's all a bit later here down south. It's all
if there are toppers you fancy, they buy that. And you should go to Haslingden Market up. I think it's Lancashire, Haslingden. Because there are big sheep sale there and be able to buy grist and tops there as well. But keep buying the fresh blood in.
Mm. But you're stuck with Gritstones all the time.
Oh, yeah,
all
ewes were Gritstones. All bred females. They never, once they sort of got the flock established, they never bought any female.
Can you remember who the auctioneers were at that time, Bill?
Peter Hanson. He always sold sheep, Peter did.
Yeah.
And he got his trilby on, and his like rubber trench coat, his brown long leggings on, and brown boots.
Mm. Did he work for a particular company, or were they...
Hanson Brothers.
And were they from Buxton then?
Buxton. Yeah.
So they'd go around the pens, would they?
They'd go around pens. Solomon pen, sheep like. Right. And if you could get you a shilling, another shilling, he would do, Peter would. he was a proper gentleman.
Mm.
He'd been, I don't know, something in the Territorial Army. He was straight as a die. Right till end. Peter were. Mm. And if Peter said anything, everybody knew that were gospel.
Yeah.
It's a very important position he had, isn't he?
Yes.
The man who was getting you the money for all your years of work.
Yes.
Year of work.
Yeah.
There'd be several trips to Buxton Market, I take it, through.
Oh, yes, I think sales would be once a fortnight. And then last sale were always October Fair. I can't just think what day it were, but it were always right at the end of October. and very often it'd be snowing in Buxton.
So that was the Buxton Fair, and then after that, when would the tops go out with the ewes?
21st of November.
November, yeah.
They went out.
That late?
Because we brought all the sheep in land, and you were sorting them out every day as they'd been rattled to take pressure off land.
Would you have a rattle strapped to the...
I think it was Venetian red powder,
yeah,
and engine oil. And you mixed it up in the tub, yeah, and you had a flat stick about so big. And one lad caught top, sat him up, the other one went up, rubbed some of this on his brisket, next top,
right,
the brisket, they rattled. So when they mounted sheep, they left it a red mark.
Right.
And we'd have them in every day, and what we call riddling out, we'd have a race. And they all run up through with a race. And there were a man at top with a little gate, anything with a red rump, that went in one pen, they went back out onto more. And all others went in other pens,
so
they were back in fields.
Stay on them, how many could they mark?
Oh, we used rattle about every couple of days, like.
Every couple of days, so
still be, you know, it'd still mark them, oh yeah.
And how many weeks would that go on for then, Bill, that period?
Most of them, they'd be topped within, 3 weeks.
So it's about 3 weeks of, yeah, every other day, everything in and,
yeah,
and working.
Because, you know, we haven't enough grass to feed them all.
So yeah, every marked one you let them out?
They went through yard gate and we just tipped them out. And next day they'd be back at Canton Fadle, back on their own ground.
Mm.
Yeah, they'd all be back on their own territory.
You'd let them go, you'd have to take them.
You know,
fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would take you up almost to not
into winter,
into December.
And then we only had a few cows. Then they didn't take much up. So yeah, maintenance. And then when it snowed, it was fox catching. So we used to have horrendous problems with foxes.
Yeah, tell us about that then.
Yeah.
How did you know where they were?
Well, if a bit of snow, you saw
the
where
prints,
they were.
Either
sent for a gamekeeper or he popped a terrier in all and went fox come out, he shot him. You know, that went on all through winter.
How many did you shoot, would you say, on average?
In them days, you'd have them up to 20 or 30. But my best year, I think that'd be early 70s, had 120 adult foxes and 22 litters of young ones.
That's the same population, isn't it?
Yeah, and don't forget... Yeah. Lord Derby had 2 or 3 full-time gamekeepers at Top End at Valley and on Axe Edge Moors. They were at them all the time.
So
Coombs Moss had a full-time gamekeeper on.
So when you were getting the cubs?
Dug them out.
You dug them out when they were tiny. They're born in about February, are they? Or?
Most of them in April. But if you didn't, didn't get the adult foxes, you couldn't leave any cubs. Because they'd be gone with them that night and... You haven't stopped your lamb killing.
No.
And, you know, these people who stand upon telling, say, oh, foxes won't kill lambs. They bloody well do.
Have you seen it happen?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
You'd get the sheep down if it were having a difficult lambing, and if it couldn't get up but next morning, they'd rip its ear off. They love sheep's ears for some reason. I don't know why. What would taste you about them?
I know. What do you think about any other predators? Because I've seen some grim things. Crows and ravens and stuff.
Carrion crows, they were horrendous. We'd full battle against them. If your sheep went down for lamb, they'd creep upon it on blind side, his eye out.
Rip its eye out, yeah.
And if lamb weren't fully out, tongue and eyes out. This weren't just... On occasions, it was regular. We once had trouble with a gull killing lambs. Because it was pecking them on top of the head, young lambs.
Yeah, yeah.
They're too old. Of course, they spent most of the time asleep.
Yeah.
And we started finding these lambs were 2 or 3 holes pecked in top of their head. And we didn't know what it were. And my dad went and got on top of it with binoculars one day while we were lambing and just sat there. And saw this great big old, I think they were black backed or something. This great big gull come, so he just walked up there sleeping up. Dead though.
Good grief.
Yeah, so then we watched for them coming and they got a lead injection.
Yeah.
Foxes were cubs, they're terrible killers for us.
Mm.
If they hadn't got cubs, they might have an odd lamb, but they weren't as much trouble at all.
When were you lambing? When did
April.
It would start,
April? April into May.
So from that time onwards, as you say, you've got foxes with cubs.
Yeah.
And they're roaringly hungry and they're out there.
Yes, yeah.
That took up all your time then, it sounds like, you know.
Well, you know, you were lambing X number of sheep, trying to keep foxes off them and crows off them as well. You know, you'd be up as it come daylight in the morning, and you didn't go to bed till after dark at night.
Goodness me.
And if you'd a sheep as had lost a lamb or something had killed lamb, you took it home, you'd either get a twin lamb or something as a sheep had died, you get that lamb, skin your dead lamb and put skin on your new one and foster it on. So you were doing that. Like at night time, yeah, when you got round to it.
Yeah, did you keep some in the, you know...
We always had cared lambs.
In the kitchen, yeah.
Yeah, we always had cared lambs.
Wow.
And then if you got a lot left at end of season, if they were doing all right, you'd carry on feeding them, because, you know, we'd always two house cows. Mm. Or if you got fed up with them, take them out, load them up, take them to Chelford Market and sell them.
Did you keep any... did you have any around as pets?
Yes.
Yeah,
when they were little, like, I didn't have playmates, only had cared lambs.
Yeah.
We had one, and Opera House borrowed it at Buxton.
Mm-hmm.
They got some sort of a play, and they wanted a sheep. So somebody used to come down for it every tea time, and we put an altar on it, and jump in back of the sea van and go off with them. And they'd instruct you when they brought it back after the last performance, which shed put it in.
They were lambing on the top, so they're up on the top. They hadn't been brought down to the farm.
We'd someone then by at farm.
Yeah.
And some were still out on.
Yeah. Walking the land every day.
Yeah.
What people are starting to say a little bit now, I know we're jumping right forward to now, but because of the sort of blanket attack that sheep have on a landscape kind of thing, that actually the skills of shepherding are very much needed again in uplands.
Yes.
You know, where you can move sheep on before they've eaten out.
Yeah, but if you can get, like, you know, a proper mole in them, that, where you'd be familiar with hefting.
Yes,
yeah.
Hefted flocks. Yeah,
well, hefted flocks now, there's nobody will go and heft them, and it's dying out.
Can you explain what the process is? Because it would be lovely to have all this explained.
Hefting, it's a... A lamb that's born on an area of moorland and it's reared there, and if you took it 10 miles away, it would always go back to the spot where it was born and sort of reared.
And this cuts across different sheep breeds, because obviously...
It's a thing that's instilled in your hill breeds.
Yeah. So which breeds would be the best for the hefted flocks? Would that be like Swaledales? But I know
the Swales, Erdwicks, your rough fells and round here in them days. You're all Derbyshire Great Stones and Woodlands in them days.
Right. So it's really allowing the natural instinct of an animal.
The natural instinct. It'll keep going back through the generations, and one new lamb... When it's its turn for it'll lamb, it'll know heft to that area.
Right.
And as long as you don't take them away, sell them, clear them out, it's self-motivated.
Yeah. The other thing about that, I suppose, kind of environmentally, they would, like other herbivores, they would have their own inbuilt sense of sort of a space, like the space, this is my territory, I go that far. And actually, when animals... They don't overgraze, do they?
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like hares wouldn't overgraze. Other herbivores, they don't. They know how to take care of their patch.
Yeah.
It's like they become their own farmers and gardeners, don't
they? Like it's heft, you know, I don't know, it might be 50 acres, might be 10 acres, what that sheep would live on. But it would know, its mother would teach it, where for it go in 12 months as to what we're growing and what we're eatable. What
February, mate, you go over there for this.
Yeah.
And it's the... thing as well, isn't it, about herbivores, that they can self-medicate a bit as well.
It was very rare you got a poorly one. If they did get poorly, all right, they they'd die, foxes would eat them, you know, end of messy. And when it was a big snow coming, most of these old moorland ewes knew they'd clear off from an area and go to somewhere where they felt they were safer.
Wow.
Except in, like in 1947, in the year 63 winter, when it was so severe, so big amounts of snow, it just swamped them.
And there was nowhere to go.
Nowhere to go. They couldn't get anywhere.
No.